is recording. Did anyone try to log in?
I invited one of the people that was added us as a contact. I don't know. Okay. I don't think she's on though.
Okay.
Is she on?
Pay attention.
Jody, are you there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Jody, can you see me?
Yeah.
Good. I asked some of my students from other states to Skype in to test the quality. So we'll ask for your feedback later, Jody. So that the book club centered on Vimalakirti Sutra will be available, the subsequent discussions. So that's good. How many of you heard the title of this text, Vimalakirti Sutra? Please raise your hand. Oh, great. Right. This is an extremely, extremely important text. This is the text for the foundation of the whole Chan Zen tradition, centered on sudden awakening. This is the text. The Lotus Sutra that we did the book club before is the text that first introduced a notion of intrinsic Buddhahood. Buddhahood means to awake, Buddha nature. Although it doesn't explicitly use that term, but it introduced this notion. But it is Vimalakirti that this particular text that made these kind of budding developments within the whole of Buddhism come alive. Right? Buddhism is not a tradition with a set, fixed doctrine it wants to impart on people. It kept on evolving in an alive, dynamic way, in the process of interacting with the people. So it kept on evolving. Although traces of sudden awakening can be found, and sudden practice, which is the core of the Chan Zen tradition, can be found even in the earliest Buddhist texts, such as the Agamas. Right? I wrote an article on this for Insight Journal, Vipassana Journal, publishing Boston. Scriptural evidence can be found, but these ideas continue to develop through different phases of these Mahayana scriptures that emerged after the Buddha's passing. Right? We had the Prajnaparamita, focusing on what wisdom is. What is the Buddha's awakening? What is wisdom? But it put in terms that's very lofty and obtuse. The Vimalakirti Sutra bring all of these ideas of Buddha nature, intrinsic awakening, sudden evidence of sudden awakening and practice, emptiness, notions of emptiness, and all of the earlier Buddhist teaching comes to life in this text, in the persona and teaching of a lay person during the Buddhist lifetime. His name is Vimalakirti. So this is a sutra devoted to him. It's one of the rare Buddhist texts where the Buddha is not the one speaking. It's one of the few. So it has the status of the Buddha's words, sutra. Sutra are typically devoted to words of the Buddha. So same status as teaching the Buddha. Vimalakirti in this text is a layperson just like you, enjoying all the pleasures of life, the material. Well, he's got it made more than all of us added together, right? Extremely wealthy, extremely influential, but not defined by his wealth, influence, politically, socially. He can enter the realm of the lowest of the low in his society. He can enter the realm of the upper echelons. He can befriend non-Buddhist, outer path. More, he can befriend demons, maras, right? All the retinues of people in our lives that we think are maras, we think are pretty bad people, right? Difficult, way beyond difficult people. You will see how he exercises wisdom and skillful means in interacting with them. All the Buddhist teachings, the highest Buddhist teaching of sudden awakening, comes to life in each chapter. This book is a favorite in the whole of East Asian Buddhist tradition. It became the core of the Chan teachings. Vimalakirti, actually, some of the things that he does, it's like a Chan master. You know, all the antics and wise ass cracks and skillful means in relating to both monastics and high level bodhisattvas. Right? He's able to interact with them and teach them the highest Buddha way. So, one of the great bodhisattvas. Right? The embodiment of wisdom in the whole Buddhism, Manjushri Bodhisattva, wisdom number one, puts Manjushri to shame in this text. Among the Buddha's monastic disciples, Shariputra, wisdom number one. Shariputra in this text, you will see. I will give you some examples. It's like a baby practitioner, toddler practitioner, compared to Vimalakirti, and shows him exactly why his practice is flawed. One of the reasons why this is so important in the Chan tradition is Chan Buddhism, Zen Buddhism, apart from different scholastic forms of the Buddhist tradition, schools and so on, one of the major points of difference is very practical. It's very down to earth. Right? That's what this text provides. This text is full of very rich stories, anecdotes, and instructions on practice, attitudes to practice. If you read, if you open your mind and really understand, try to understand what is it saying. So what I ask those of you who are interested in the book club centering on this text, don't look it up in some Buddhist dictionary to find out the definition of this and that and for this passage and this technical word. Get the gist and translate it in your life. If you can, put to practice one phrase that jumps out at you, something that you don't understand, or something that you understand, something that you really appreciate, you don't quite understand, but you feel something is there. Take that sentence practice it for the week, for the month, and see how you can relate to it. In other words, make the Buddha Dharma come alive. Some of the things he says is fantastic, fantastic, wonderful, wonderful, his teachings. And if we have time, I'll read some passages for you. How to relate to sickness. What is the nature of sickness? What are the causes? What is meditation? The Prajnaparamita Sutra already talked about what wisdom is. In this text, Vimalakirti shows you how wisdom comes to life in your life, in lay life, how it comes to life in relation to people. What is awakening? It is with the sick. It is with the demons. It is with the difficult people. Where is the site of awakening? The Bodhi Mandala. It is amidst passions. Passions? That's one of the things that Buddhism is very careful about. Right? They don't want to touch it because it's like a venomous snake. It's addictive, possessive. Right? But this is precisely where our path, our practice, is revealed. How you relate to other people. Right? Our recent involvement with the homeless shelter, the Kearney Center, for example. You know, we're learning. We're learning from the people, the clients, and we're learning from the staff. One of the things we found with the clients is, you know, we had this plan, we're going to go in there, share with them meditation, we're going to develop it further, develop a community of practitioners within the shelter, right? And then we discovered that they are a group, a flux group. Every week, it's new people. Their schedule change. Their needs, the people that come, their needs change. The clientele, the clump change. They reveal to our teachers that go there what they need. And very often, they put our teachers at a very uncomfortable spot. Of course, our timekeepers, teachers are beginning to share, but it is precisely where we, through interaction with people, that we see what is needed. We just have to be aware, receptive, open, and adapt, respond. Right? But first we have to recognize the teaching that I've given before about causes and conditions. Perhaps some of you remember what that is. Right. First is what? With causes and conditions. First is recognize. To recognize the different conditions. If we're too cloudy here, too much clutter here, we can't see what's out there. We can't see what's in here. So we have to strengthen our practice so we're clear. And then conversely, what is out there becomes very clear. Recognize the different causes and conditions. Second.
Wait.
That's third.
Create.
Sometimes we have to create the causes and conditions. Draw from our resources on the spot. We practice so the Dharma comes alive in our lives. With our own experience, we can draw from it. Create the proper causes and conditions that people need. Sometimes we have to adapt, flow with. Sometimes we have to wait for. So recognizing, creating, flowing with, adapting with, waiting, all of these things can only come about through our interaction with others. The difficulties we have with people, the difficult situations we find ourselves in, they are our path. They come alive. They teach us. They show us. Exactly. And our own resistances, right? Our own ideals, kind of fabricated storylines we tell ourselves that we project, they will fall apart. And that's what Vimalakirti does. Deconstruct and tear down, undermine any fixed idea, not only on Buddha Dharma, the Buddhist teaching, but also social issues on gender, hierarchy, right, on practice, on what is awakening, on daily situations of wealth, how to relate to wealth, how to relate to your own sickness and your own suffering, our own vexation. So it's very, very rich. Right? And all of which is centered on prajna, which is wisdom of emptiness, of selflessness. This wisdom of selflessness manifests as non-abiding, being able to be completely open, naked, not literally, and adapt. Even the word adapt is useless here. It's like the air that you breathe. No obstructions. The teaching of no form. That's the working of the Bodhisattva. All of you, aspiring Bodhisattva practitioners. The only way to do that is through selflessness. Selflessness, now that you don't have personality anymore. Vimalakirti has a big personality. It doesn't mean you're empty, you're not there anymore, you have no memory, you have no intellect. You will see, you will read Vimalakirti's skillful means, his eloquence, right? His wisdom, expedient means, and all of which is centered on selflessness, no self. Now, no self in textbook Buddhism. I have different formulas, the five skandhas, and, dependent origination, dead Buddha Dharma. That's dead Buddha Dharma. Attached to it, it's not even Buddha Dharma. It's not even the Buddha's teaching. If you become a source of attachment, genuine Buddha Dharma. Buddha Dharma teachings, Vimalakirti. You see how the teaching of causes and conditions, adaptability, flexibility, how flexible? Like air, like the air that you breathe, permeate everything freely, unobstructed. That's the gate of liberation. And that manifests in one of the chapters, culminating, called the gate to non-duality, which is this particular sutra's expression of emptiness. Right? Emptiness. Non-duality, non-opposition does not mean unification, does not mean oneness. Right? It's emptiness. No self, others. No action, yet everything is done. Engage with everything. Engage with everything. Cultivate the six perfections of generosity, perfection or precept. Morality. Perfection of patience. Perfection of diligence. Perfection of meditation. Perfection of wisdom, guided by. Engaging all these acts, yet do not harbor notions of self-referentiality. That me, I'm helping. They who are being helped. And my action, look how good my action is. I'm helping. Yet engaging everything. Sentient beings, living beings, those people around us, when we share Buddha Dharma with them, when we help them, they help themselves. They help us. Yet, no one's being helped. If you want to know why, join the book club. The teaching is so wonderful here. So wonderful. And it will adapt to your understanding. If you read it this year, join a book club, you read it 10 years later, 20 years later, it'll be very different. The scripture is completely alive. Completely alive. And it's entertaining. The whole scripture centers around the story of Vimalakirti pretending to be sick. Pretending to be sick. And he knows the Buddha has omniscience, can read, clairvoyant. So he generates a thought. I'm here sick. And the Buddha doesn't send his disciple to come and see me. And the Buddha realized this. Today, I will ask my disciple to go visit Vimalakirti. First starts with the 10 great disciples of the Buddha. None of them want to visit Vimalakirti. Why? They're all chicken out. Because sometime in the past, Vimalakirti has totally showed them up what Buddha Dharma is, what genuine teaching is. I'll give you a little taste. Right. This begins with third chapter. Right. And then he moves on to the Bodhisattvas. The third chapter is the disciples. The 10 great disciples of the Buddha. Okay? They're like the top ones, okay? And then he moves on to all the Bodhisattva, beginning with Maitreya, the next Buddha. That's the next Buddha, right? Waiting to be. Vimalakirti shows him down. So, me, actually, I don't want to go visit him. Last time I talked to him, I was this and that. And then they're all scared because he's so eloquent, freestyle, teaching the Dharma based on the circumstances and made them realize something so profound, liberating, that every one of the audience, the people present, basically realizes sudden awakening in this text. Okay? But the first chapter and the second chapter is very important too. Right. Beginning with Shariputra, wisdom number one among Buddha's 10 great disciples. Right. He's there wandering, you know, all the Buddhas have their own pure land. They've accumulated tons of merit and virtue. As a result, their realm becomes completely purified, conducive to practice for their disciples. And he's there wondering, strange, where's my teacher's pure land? Shakyamuni. It's like, oh, I see, it's like hills, rocks, and the land, and the garbage. And most importantly, all I saw is defilement, suffering, agony. And the first chapter, the Buddha knowing him, his thought, said, Shariputra, you want to know where the prayer land is? He says, yes. You want to know where Shakyamuni Buddha, your teacher's pure land is? He says, yes. Sticks out his big toe, touch the floor with the big toe to the ground. Suddenly, samsara, the world that we are in now. This means your office space, your colleagues, the difficulty people that you meet, the wars that we have in the Middle East, the earthquakes, the sufferings that people encounter recently in Nepal, this place suddenly transformed into pure land, adorned with all the ornaments, jewels. Every being in this place articulates the Buddha Dharma, the birds, the sounds. This means the arguments that you hear, the people shooting rockets, everything adorns the Buddha Dharma. Shariputra was overwhelmed. And the Buddha says, samsara is my pure land. If your mind is pure, you will perceive the pure land. And then he let go his big toe to the ground. And then everything turns back to, you know, rocks, hills, you know, grass, and people suffering. This is a very important message. Very important. This is the foundation of my teacher's vision of building the pure land on earth. Where is the pure land? It's not the Pure Land Sutra in the West, Amitabha. It's here. It's based on this sutra, Vimalakirti, the sudden vehicle of awakening. This is the foundation of Chan. When the mind is pure, everything is pure. Is that just denial? Is that just suppression or self-delusion? I don't see war. No. Everything is expounding to you, the teaching. Isn't that true? Where can you get free lessons in patience without someone who's giving you trouble? Where can you perfect patience and diligence? Where? Where can you perfect precepts with our own shortcomings, habit tendencies and vexations, inability to uphold precepts? Where can we perfect that? Right here. Our very inability, that is the path. Not something out there to attain. The pure mind. That's why my teachers say, having precepts to break is better than not having precepts at all. Through breaking, not purposefully of course, through breaking, we change. We change our ways. Through interacting with people, finding our shortcomings, our inability to help them, we learn, that inspire us. So we are, like I said in the beginning of the talk, the way we relate to Carney Center, the homeless shelter. What do? What kind of mindset do we generate when we go there? Do you remember? Gratitude, humility. Why? They are our teachers. They are our path. See? And we treat that with everyone, beginning with those closest to us. Chapter 1. Chapter 2, expedient means. It's like what I've been saying for the talk. Sentient beings. The essence of chapter 2, expedient means, not some skillful means that you have to be awakened and only Bodhisattva at the highest level can exercise. Expedient means, what's expedient mean? The message of that chapter is sentient beings, living beings, the people in your life. they exercise, they draw out our resources to share, to learn, to practice with them. How many of you have difficult people in your life? Raise your hand. They are your bodhisattvas. Third chapter. The source of sudden awakening. Right? The third chapter is called The Disciples. This is the part when I said that the Buddha asked one by one his 10 great disciples. None of them want to go to visit. I'll give you one example. The Buddha says, Shariputra, it's wisdom number one. You go and visit Vimalakirti. Inquire about his illness. Fake illness, right? Shariputra replied, well, world honor, well, I'm not really qualified to visit him. Why? Because I recall on one occasion in the past when I was sitting quietly in meditation under a tree in the forest. At that time, Vimalakirti approached me, say, "Ah, Shariputra, you should not assume this kind of sitting, quiet sitting. Quiet sitting means that in the threefold world of suffering, anguish, you manifest neither body nor will, intentionality. There's something profound here. Because all of you are here because of intention. I want to better this. I want to attain quiet, peace. I want better health. I want to concentrate. Every one of your actions in daily life is governed by sense of intentionality, closely tied to your body. Think about it. Examine it. Your decisions in life, even your random movements, such as Mary Ellen, sorry to use you as a guinea pig, her moving about. Why is that? She's uncomfortable. Sat for too long. Guogu talks too much. That intentionality of moving, adjusting the body, tied to the body. Our decision to move, to go places, to study something, and what seems to be learn something that's up here, still tied to the body. So Vimalakirti put the needle right where the blood is and says, true meditation, free form, getting involved with your body. Second, your intentions. That means free from body and mind. Show me your meditation. Free from body and mind, show me your meditation. He didn't stop there. Vimalakirti is very good at driving the nail all the way there until you feel so uncomfortable, you just bow to him. So he pressed on. This is quiet sitting. Not arising out of your samadhi of complete cessation means your samadhi of nirvana. And yet, showing yourself in the ceremonies, activities of daily life. This is quiet sitting. Yes, that means going to the movie theater, having dinner with your friends, going to the party. If you just go to the party to drink, then you're not showing silent, true meditation. He says, first principle, abide in nirvana and yet engage. That's true meditation. And then you may think that abiding nirvana, that's the principle. He pressed further. not abandoning the principle of the way. Engage yourself with the activities of the common world. Mind not fixed on internal things, and yet not engage with external either. That's quiet sitting. Unmoved by the sundry theories, but practice the 37 elements of the way, aspects of the way. This is traditional Buddhist path. You know, three higher learning, divided into eightfold path, divided further into 37 aids to awakening. That part you can look it up in the dictionary. Just find out what it is. There may be a glossary in the back. 37 aids. So traditional practices engage in the world, yet not dwelling in nirvana either. Just when you think that, I have to abide by the principle. Not attached to that either. And then he goes on, and says, if you can do that kind of sitting, you will merit the Buddha's seal of approval. This means that will be your teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha's true teaching of meditation. He will give you his seal of approval. Shariputra says, Buddha, when I heard him say all these things, I had no way to reply him. This is why I'm not competent. I can't go visit him. So the Buddha said, okay, next, Maha Moggallana. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Moggallana. Moggallana. Very hard to pronounce. Moggallana. You go visit. Shariputra, during the Buddha's lifetime, was the right hand of the Buddha. The left hand was Moggallana. And then he relates what happened with him. Moving down to Mahakashyapa. Mahakashyapa is the first lineage master, patriarch of the Chan tradition. That's the asceticism number one. He felt he was not articulate, so he exerted himself to extreme self-inflicted difficult practices in caves. But when the Buddha passed away, he came out and led the Sangha. And from him, the first patriarch of Chan passed on to the second, Ananda, and so on and so forth. So every one of them decides, I can't do it. Until, you know, it goes to the Bodhisattvas, great Bodhisattvas, until comes to Manjushri. And what happens then is, Manjushri says, he's very wise and skillful, but I will go. And when everyone heard that, yo, Manjushri is going. It's going to be a showdown. All the disciples and the Bodhisattvas accompany Manjushri. He says, Manjushri is going. We got to go. We got to see what's going to happen. You know? So then everyone follows Manjushri to show up at Vimalakirti's door. Right? He has no furniture whatsoever in the room. Just a bed. And he's lying there waiting for the showdown, right? And it's just like, I'm telling you, it's just like a charm master. This is in chapter 5. I'll read you a little bit. First thing Manjushri notices, says, Vimalakirti, you're sick. Why are you sick? This is can you endure it? How long have you been sick? These are not ordinary questions. And Vimalakirti replied, "This illness of mine is born of ignorance and feelings of attachment. Because of living beings are sick, therefore I'm sick. If all living beings are relieved of sickness, then my sickness will be mended. Because the Bodhisattva, for the sake of living beings, entered the realm of birth and death. Because he is in the realm of birth and death, he suffers illness. If living beings can gain release from illness, the Bodhisattva will no longer be ill." He goes on with some parables. And then Manjushri says, "Layman, why is this room so empty?" Vimalakirti replied, "Because the land of Buddhas are all empty." This is after having said that the land of the Buddha is here. Right? "Why are they empty then?" Manjushri pressed on. Vimalakirti says, "They are empty because of emptiness." And why is emptiness empty? "It is empty of distinctions, therefore it is empty." Distinctions too are empty. "Well, if that's the case," Manjushri says, "how then is emptiness to be sought?" Emptiness is the ultimate teaching of Buddha Dharma. "How can you practice it then? Right? How can you be free?" "It may be sought in the 62 erroneous views of outer path." What? You may not know this, but at the Buddha's time, there were 62 erroneous teachers, heterodox, teaching deviant views. So how do you reach emptiness? How do you reach the Buddha's emancipation, liberation? Study erroneous views. It's not like, "Oh, study Buddha Dharma. I'll teach you Four Noble Truths, Eightfold Path, Five Skandhas, and I'll explain." He says, "If you want to know Buddha Dharma, where Buddha Dharma is, it is precisely where Buddha Dharma is, seems to be not." How are the 62 views to be sought? They may be sought in the emancipation of the Buddhas. That is, through erroneous views. Who has erroneous views? Raise your hand. I'll give you one example. You want to do something, you know you should do something, but you can't do it. How many of you have felt this way? I want to see everyone's hands up. Right? That's the erroneous view. You have this view, but you can't embody it. And how many of you do this? You know, when you do something wrong, you try to come up with excuses to get yourself off the hook. It's like, "Well, it's because of this, because of that, because everything outside you is wrong. That's why I did that." How many of you have done this before? I used to do that all the time with my teacher. "Who put this thing out? well, because the chef monk, he didn't do this. So my teacher's looking at me like, you fool. You know? Erroneous views. The view that there is an other, that there is a me that I'm trying to protect, justify my actions. Erroneous views. That's where emancipation is, liberation is. That's where Buddhas become Buddhas. And how is emancipation of the Buddha to be sought? Manjushri ask. It may be sought in the minds and actions of all living beings. Replied Vimalakirti. That means everyone in your life, their thinking, their actions, show you the gate to liberation. And you may ask why I am without attendance, since you ask why the room is empty. Right? Vimalakirti says, and Manjushri is like, yeah, I do want to know. Where are your attendants? You're supposed to be very rich. You got all this wealth. Right? My attendants are the Maras, the demons. They are all my attendants. That means all the people that give you trouble in your life, they are the closest. Attendant monks, you know, to the teacher, that's the closest disciple to the teacher. Watch him 24/7, always with the teacher. Vimalakirti tried to be close with all the people that have difficulty, that present difficulty with him. That's basically the message. You see? People want to shun, run away from it. They want to learn meditation because they want some peace. Vimalakirti, the Bodhisattva way, the way of non-duality. No self, no others. Everything is accomplished. How? And what is accomplished? All beings liberate themselves and liberate you along with it. So the only way to practice is to cherish everyone in your life. They are your path. That's the Chan way. That's the Zen way. Cherish everyone, your parents, your husband, your wives, your children, your co-workers, your seemingly enemies, as your own child. This is the jewel. This is the gem that the Buddha has left for us. This is your wealth. This is where you perfect your path. Towards it. You see that? Finally, they have their back and forth, you know. And then Manjushri asks, how do you understand non-duality? And then 31 bodhisattvas stand up and share. My understanding of non-duality is blah, 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 blah. And then 32nd Manjushri, understand, all of what you have said is just words. Non-duality is beyond description, beyond words, beyond your own narratives, beyond your constructs, your ideas. And then that shut everyone up. Manjushri, embodiment of wisdom. All the bodhisattvas like, oh, yes. And then Manjushri turns to Vimalakirti. So, how do you understand it? Vimalakirti goes, Manjushri. That shut Manjushri up. His silence. Because he's still telling people not to attach to words, don't talk, don't attach to concept. And then Vimalakirti just zip. He's demonstrating this instead of telling you what it is about. You understand? But all along. A lot of people make a big deal of that chapter, the gate of liberation, gate of non-duality. But all along, if you just focus on that chapter, you miss all the richness of how to practice the Buddha Dharma. So I encourage all of you to, that's the culminating chapter. Read everything very carefully. The book club is designed so that we share our own experience that week. From one little passage, we'll go chapter by chapter, sometimes two chapters at a time, but something that jumps out at you, something you can share. So we solidify our community, sense of community. So it's not Guagu talking all the time. So all of you expound the Buddha Dharma. All of you share. Now when you share, don't, I'm the teacher this week. Here's my understanding. Humility, gratitude, very grateful for the opportunity. And how you understand these passages. So center on experience, and we'll rotate to different people's house. And people, my students from out of state, they will Skype in. Okay? The logistics, I will send out through our email. Basically, we'll have to decide on the structure. And have people sign up, whose house would it be? If it's too many people sign up, we'll divide into groups. And the Skype folks can log into whoever groups they want. All right. Depends on how many people sign up. And the text we will use is by John McCrae. It's the latest translation. Burton Watson, this is a translation in the 80s, I think. 97. It's good, but it's very smooth, very polished translation. But some of the key ideas, it's just, it glosses over them. Like loving kindness translated as pity. What? You know? And some key ideas just translate too colloquial. He tried to relate to everyday people and so they can understand it. And then too scholarly of version is not good either, with tons of footnotes, right? So John McCrae strikes a balance. Okay? So we'll use his translation. And thank to BDK. This is Bukyo Denkyo Kyokai. It's an organization in Japan that had made very wealthy Buddhist organization, made a vow to translate the thousands of texts in the Buddhist canon into English, so all for free, download. So we're not breaking copyright laws. The link that we send you, you can download. That text by John McCrae has two texts because Vimalakirti is short. Right? So there's two sutras. First is Srimala Sutra. Don't read that sutra. It's the second half, Vimalakirti, by him. Okay. There's so much I want to share in so little time. Part of the structure is the questions accumulated, collected, that people can't answer during the discussion groups, the book club, then they will be presented to me, and I will make opportunity on certain Mondays to address those questions. So we can get down to some details of about practice, about certain attitudes and views. And I will show up once in a while when I have opportunity. I will show up to these book clubs. I will try to avoid them. Because what happens when I show up is people don't share. They just want to listen to me. So I don't want to be present. I want everyone to share and learn. And in this process, you will learn something about yourself. The way you share, some people share, this is why everyone wants to accept their views. Right? Some people, the way they share, all of the personalities will come out. Oh yeah, you're right, I'm wrong, I can't. Some people have all kinds of things. It will all manifest on the table. Right? All of that is part of practice. We do it outside the center. So to establish kind of sense of community, so we can relate to each other, we can meet at Starbucks, we can meet at wherever, okay, as long as there's Wi-Fi. Okay? So the details will follow. Any questions? Are you all excited? How many of you want to join the book club? Okay. So last time we request people to be there, to commit to all 8 sessions or however many sessions, 7, right? We try to, if you're gonna join a book club, you commit. Otherwise, if you spotty it, and we have to other people have to explain to you what the previous chapters are. We covered that already. It just becomes cumbersome. People cannot go deeper. So we all share and explore this text like a mirror for your life and your life, and then commit. Right. So watch for that email, and more details will follow. Class, the first session begins September 11th, so we have some time, okay? Danny, you had a question.
You referred to people when you said Maras, but Maras and demons usually has to do with like attitudes or internal dialogue, like internal chatter, I thought.
Mara, external and internal. Neither internal, neither external. Everything. Yeah.
I was just referring it, because when the Buddha said that external is the pure land, mm-hmm. I thought the thing that would change would be internal, so if things external are not Maras, then it would be internal.
Yes, but if the Buddha made a division between, if I change here, then everything else would change out there, duality. He's demarcating. There is no division between internal and external. Even practically speaking, like this heap of 4 elements, earth, water, fire, and wind, it's out here too. Where's the boundary between like here and there? Actually, scientists are slowly discovering that. Of course, there's a conventional boundary, the shape of my skin, to my silhouette, that's the boundary of my body. But so porous. It's so porous. What is inside? What is outside? Right? These terms only limit and solidify, reify our experiences into things. Very dangerous. As soon as we see that, we see, oh, this is me here and you're out there. That's an idea. That point, Vimalakirti totally turns upside down and undermines in this text. You know, so we have to. It's a wonderful text. Wonderful text. Yes?
I don't understand the difference between non-duality and oneness. I see oneness as no longer, there's like no separation.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference between oneness and non-duality? The problem with oneness is there's a one. Buddhist notion of non-duality is nature of emptiness.
But it's just 2 different words, though. I guess I don't see the difference between the like meaning of them.
It's words, it's concepts, but unfortunately, people are shaped by words and concepts. In truth, there is no difference. In reality, when someone believes that I am one with Creator, or I am one with all beings, there will be trace of attachment. The self is only expanded to all. It's not completely dissolved. When circumstances change, threat is present, the self will congeal. Still, opposition will come. This is something, if this is a topic that strikes us as very important, this is a topic, this is your path. This is just with that eye, with those glasses, you process the text and then it will jump out at you throughout the text what that means. If you're interested in health of the body, you put that lens on, right? You put that glass and the teaching will reveal itself, right? If you want to know what is Chan and Zen awakening like, with that lens, you read. You see? Recently, there's a section on illness, right? Manjushri is inquiring into Vimalakirti on what is illness, right? What is his illness? But Vimalakirti extend to that. Recently, I have a friend, a Dharma sister, who has cancer. Stage 4. She's come a long way. She's almost halfway there healed. Right? And some of the teaching here, it's wonderful. Wonderful. How to view the body. What is sickness? What is the genesis? Right? Is there something that's not sick? Every lens you put on, that's the information you will get. Okay? That's a great question. Great question. Because non-duality, oneness, a lot of people actually expound that. There's a whole bookshelf of New Age, Barnes and Nobles. Everyone's talking about oneness, nature, I'm one, you know, whatever. Everyone's talking about it. Everyone. What's the difference here? You look. Right? You look with an open mind. What is it actually saying? And translate in your life. Translate into your life. Right? And then practice it. What obstructs? What are the dangers of oneness? Of holding on to a view, or words, or idea, ideology. Even the ideology of liberation, oneness, emptiness, nirvana. If you hold on to that, trouble. Trouble. So, any one last question? Okay. Okay. I have 40, 50 people tonight. Only 2 questions. Okay, I'm sure you'll have a lot of questions when you read it. Please enjoy the text. Thank you. Drive safe. Have a good night.